In the lesson today, let me kind of point out what I want to try to do overall. And maybe we can accomplish this. They're giving me an extra 5 minutes here. So since Clayton stepped down, I know everybody's now wanting Clayton to be our normal preacher because he gets out on time. But at any rate, with this little bit of extra time, we're going to try to notice a few things about the nature of the tabernacle. What I'd like to help you do is get that in your mind, a kind of what it was like, in the sense of some of the things we don't normally put in the Bible in sort of a real-life context like it was. These are not made-up places. They're real places. These aren't made-up events. They're real events. When I was a kid in Tampa, I remember going up out of that basement there in the old building and going across the park, and we stepped off how far it was that you had for Noah's Ark, how much of a space that would be. And I have never forgotten how much I was just amazed by that and thought, wow. And then went on a little bit later to a World War II carrier. And notice, I thought, you know what? I think this was not too far different from what the dimension of Noah's Ark with regard to length and all of that. So those things got put in perspective a little bit there and helped me be amazed with it. We've talked about Jerusalem before, and I've tried to get people to see that we are not used to thinking of a city that big, a capital city with all the things going on, that at the longest, about a mile and a quarter, and at the widest, about three-quarters of a mile. So you think about all these things happening, of what took place at Pentecost, and them hearing the noise. Wherever they were, they would have heard it in that little of a space. And so they came to that. When you think about the space and the events as they are put together, places, it helps you to be able to understand that. And I have been a kind of World War II historian on the side as well, and seeing the sites of those battlegrounds helps you to picture what actually took place and the momentousness of how it was that you came into these battles. And I think that's so with the tabernacle as well, when we think about it. And later on, as you compare that with the temple and so forth, you're going to see it's still, along the same lines, but there are some very big differences with regard to the makeup of how big it is and all the things that are there of the ornateness and so forth. All right. When we look at the outline of the book of Exodus, like we started with in going through this, Israel is in Egypt in the first part of this, and that goes through chapter 12, and you get the plagues with regard to what happened to bring them up. Then you've got the exodus from Egypt going towards Sinai, and that's the second portion of this book. The third, then, is Israel at Sinai. That's where you receive the law, the giving of the Ten Commandments, all of those things that were done there. Moses going on to Mount Sinai to receive the full sense of the tablets and all of the law. He comes back then and starts to give that law, the specifications for the tabernacle. And if you notice, we last time covered the offering for supplies, the design of the ark, the design of the table of showbread, and the design of the candlestick. But that's all we really covered as far as those things that are given there. The next thing you have in chapters 26 and 27 is the design of the tabernacle building itself, which we're going to go over this morning. The design of the altar for burnt offerings that is there. The design of the court of the tabernacle, which is where you would be outside of that tabernacle itself. And the tending of the lamp. What was to happen with that lamp, the candlestick? Did it not be that which would go out day or night. They were to tend that and make sure they continually had oil for that. We're going to see some other things with regard to the specifications of the tabernacle and the worship and that on Sunday. But when you go over to the next part of what you've got the between the specifications and the building of the tabernacle, what takes place in that interim time there. Now, in the building of the tabernacle, what we're going to do is take the things that were the specifications before, and then notice those being built. We've already done that there in some of those previous chapters, chapter 35. But now we're going to do it with chapter 36, completion of the offering, and the making of the tabernacle itself, the kind of a skeleton that you have of that and the covering over it. Last time we looked at those things within the ark, and or within the tabernacle, pardon me, the furniture within the tabernacle. We're not going to look at that again. What we're going to look at is that which is outside of the tabernacle in that area of the courtyard itself. The altar of burnt offerings, the brass laver, the making of that court itself, and then see the total amount of the supplies that were offered, which is going to be huge given the sense of what we're looking at. Now, the last part is what we'll get to there on the assembly of the tabernacle, trying to put that all together in God's pleasure with what they had done. So, let's look at this. The furnishings within the tabernacle, this was the inside one. What's that? All right, Ark of the Covenant, what's that? All right, candlestick or the lampstand, how about that? Altar of incense, that's it. Table of showbread, okay. Then you've got what's outside. The furnishings on the outside in the court would be the brass laver. That was there for the priests to go and cleanse themselves, to wash in that ceremonial sort of a way there before they entered into the tabernacle, the holy place, or before they did the work that needed to be done. This is the bronze altar. What's that used for? Altar of burnt offerings, it's also called. And that's oftentimes what it is that we know of as that particular thing is the altar of burnt offering. Just a minute, I got this so I keep up with it on all of these because there are going to be a lot of charts and then I forgot to do it. Okay. Now, that altar of burnt offering was made to be something where you had this as put into one piece, but some of those were removable. This grating, why would you need a grating there over it? All right, you had to have something there for the offering to go on and the fire to be underneath. And so that's the purpose for that. You might notice the top or the horns of the altar would have been up here. Those would have been kind of locked down everything except for that area of the fire itself, which would have consumed the burnt offering in it. So when you're looking at the whole of the thing, here you have that Ark of the Covenant back in the Holy of Holies, or the most holy place. Here you have that altar of incense, table of showbread, and golden lampstand in the holy place. You would have had these walls that are around it, but this doesn't have a wall, you notice. There's an opening that would be there in that east side or the front of that particular tabernacle. To go out to the bronze laver and also out to the altar of burnt offerings. Here you would have had tables somewhat of the preparation of the sacrifice to take place. Then you had that courtyard surrounded in a way that there is kind of a fence, if for lack of a better term, that would go around all of it. Let's look at the tabernacle itself, the construction that's there. You had these boards that would have been in there that were overlaid with gold, and the posts that were behind them to set all of that kind of stuff up. And when you get a little bit more, what you notice is this out front has the covering here, the curtain that would take place. You had some said to be the cherubim that would be in that cloth or woven in that. The women who were making the cloth, it pointed out, had done skillful work of putting those cherubim around to be always present in that sort of a way. There's also not a solid wall here. It's a wall that is simply the curtains that would be between the most holy place and the holy place. You had that altar of incense that was up against it. Now, in the book of Hebrews, it presents the altar of incense as being in the most holy place. Why? The placement of it was on the outside. What did the altar of incense do? What did it put out? Bunch of smoke and everything that would have been there, the kind of way in which there was the hiding of that. What is looked at and said in some of the things of the oral tradition of the Jews is that what a high priest would do is to bring that around then this altar of incense so that it would be more of a shadowing in there, more of a smoky kind of a thing, so that there would be further the hiding of the presence of God or His glory that's there, that Shekinah that would have been here at the point of the Ark of Covering. He was to go back and meet with God there in the mercy seat. The mercy seat, the cherubim wings that went over that, that's where God said His place of meeting was. So if there's a reverence for God, what do you do? Probably that's the idea of getting the maximum effect of that altar. But at any rate, this is the placement that is given there of all of that. There's a lot of things that we could talk about. This, if you go to the website and you get these charts or get these drawings, this to me is the best one of the things because it gives you the passages of all of this. And kind of brings it together, and so when you're studying it, you've got a real quick guide to go to on all of those things. All right, the skeletal structure, let's say, the boards of the tabernacle. You had these boards that were here that were to be put in, and in those boards you had there to be this pole that would go through. And there are actually several poles that are there through this. We'll notice that in just a minute. But it's your way of binding that together. You notice at the bottom there's also something that it would go into, and we'll look at that in bottom and in top as well to bind it all together. Here's how those bars work with the boards. These boards are brought along here. They're covered in gold, remember. You have these bars then that go some on the outside that will go there. In other words, they're pointing in towards the tabernacle itself, in where the priest does his work. But here is a structural one that will go through that. Now, they'll have the sockets to sit in down here and those tenons that will go within those sockets. That's how they built it. We didn't go to Home Depot and get nails. It was done in this sort of way, making it a great deal of care and a good bit of workmanship if it's put together in that sort of way. Now, that's the tenon and how it fits into that kind of a place. If you're going to do that, you're going to support that much weight, how close has that got to be? Those of you who work with wood, that's something that you're going to have to be just right down to every little bit of that fitting in a tight sense, but still fitting. And you would have had that there all the way around in doing this rather than doing it with any kind of nails, and they didn't have any putty to look over your mistakes there. That's where mine are seen. I have a lot of putty on everything I do. Here's how you have those posts that are there. In the court, you have the posts that are wood, as it's given there. They have copper here. It's actually the bronze that is put in. It's thought to be that which is of that substance in both of these cases. The wood on the outside, there's gold that's in the tabernacle holy place, and then this as well in the most holy place down here, the part that you put the board into, it's made out of silver rather than that bronze, like in the other, which means what? Signified a greater value. That's the place where only the high priest would go once a year. Now, over the top of that, you've got these coverings that are pointed out. It says there's one that's there of goat's hair. The fine linen one is the one that would face in towards the priest as he's doing the work in that. He would see on top of this. But then the next one was the goat's hair. What would that have been given for? If you had goat's hair or goat's hide, what could you do with that? Do what? All right, that's going to be your last defense, if you will, on the rain, that there's going to be some that it can absorb in there and rid out in a natural kind of webbing process that would take place. The ram skins were dyed red. It was put over the top of the goat's hair. In other words, that's to repel it in the first place, not let that any moisture in. And then over the top of that, what's sometimes called the badger skin, the word is, from the original, is the word sea cow. In other words, a cow that comes out of the sea. Now, I don't know why they translated it badger there. There's some other words that are very close to that. And I think that's what probably the King James did. I don't really know. But what it seems to me to be is that you have seals that are readily available along that coast of the Sinai Peninsula. And that would seem to me probably to be the likely case there. Some also put this porpoise skin. I don't know why, but my mouth is dry this morning. I can't press the button. At any rate, all of this would have been an effect of trying to keep that weatherproof within. So here's what we've got in just the setup of it as it occurs. You've got the most holy place, the holy place. Here's our furniture, the ark back here in the most holy, the altar of incense, table of showbread, and the candlestick in the holy place. The laver outside in the court for them to wash, and then you have the altar of burnt offerings out here. I want you to notice in this layout that this is the way you ought to get it every time. This is to the north. That's to the west, east, south. When we are ones who are looking at it, how do we always read something as far as a progression? In English, left to right or right to left? Always left to right. And so in many places you see this switched around. I think that's probably the reason, is that we're made on the deal of here's your advancing from left to right. Well, Hebrew's right to left. And you always ought to see this this illustration in this way. That's going to make us think a little bit more what takes place. Over here to the east is where the opening is, not the west. It's to the east. And you're going from east, from that, I just goofed that up, didn't I? That should be over there. Now, you had the setup within this whole place. Now, from east to west, you're going in that sort of fashion. Here's what you have as far as the proportions. You've got 100 cubits for this whole court, approximately 150 feet for the whole thing. That's the outside wall and all of the court. For the tabernacle itself, you've got 45 feet in length and 15 feet across. Now, this was two-thirds of the area. That was a third. The cubits that would be there for this particular one made then the Holy of Holies, what it was across and what it was in length, an exact square. So if you have that as an exact square, this is 15 feet by 15 feet. Foster's, what's a good master bedroom size?
Mostly 18 by around 16.
Okay. So a little smaller than a master bedroom. Does that surprise you? I remember the first time I started really thinking about this and put it in those terms, I thought, man, that's tiny. The whole thing, 45 by 15. What would be the size of a standard house? What would the size be, length and width? Foster?
About 75, long by about 40.
Okay. So that's a good bit less than a lot of our houses would be, right? If you remember, some of our starter houses would have been right around there. That maybe even a little bit more than some have is that, but that's tiny, isn't it? When I look at that, you look at the property itself all around it, 150 feet long by what it points out here, 50 cubits or about 75 foot in width. How does that match up with your lot? Any of you have multiple acres or an acre even? That's a whole lot less than what this took to put in. Now, what does that tell you about all of these things? In our mind, we're looking at it sometimes as this huge kind of place, but it's not. It's a small place. I wonder why. How many people need to be in there? You had maybe at the most need three or four during the place of setting up. That would be inside. You almost never needed more than two. That would have been going around to minister within there. Within the last compartment of the Holy of Holies, who would be there? Only one person. That's the high priest. That's it. There wasn't a need for a lot of people to be around. There's not a need for a great deal of space. But that always surprises, I think, some when you've never looked at that before, that you're talking about that tiny of a space. Jason, I think you had.
Well, just the materials that are being used in there, you know, the precious metals and things like that, it would be quite an ordeal if, you know, if we got much bigger. That already is a lot in weight.
Now, we're going to talk about those in just a second, as you might notice there.
And all the stuff had to be carried by the Levites. Everything that was in there, all the furnishings, all had to be carried by the Levites. So,
all of them, we'll look at that a little bit later on too, were divided up into portions, and they had their own responsibilities with regard to the transportation of the tabernacle, the erection of it, the ministering within it. All of that you have as far as the various ones who were able to do that. Go ahead.
I was thinking they could see the ends of those poles sticking out of that most holy place. Am I thinking wrong on that?
They could see what?
The ends of the poles that carried that Ark of the Covenant.
Oh, yeah.
They could see those sticking through the curtain, is what I've always thought of, unless I'm thinking wrong.
I don't think through the curtain, but they could. That they were held within that place. And a lot of times, thank you. Nobody say that I'm a heavy drinker. When you're looking at all of those things, and you think about how small it is in that sort of way, then go down here to the metal that's used in the construction, the gold. 4,400 pounds of gold. How much is gold an ounce right now?
$1,860.
Okay. How many ounces you got? Troy ounces in a pound, isn't it 14?
No,
Troy ounces are 14, I think. Okay, so multiply that by 14.
Harry, I already did this.
Okay.
Today. At 18 karat gold, which is 75% pure, right,
okay,
it would be $89 million.
Okay.
Roughly. Almost 90.
Anybody want to spend that inside your house? For who has a house like that? $89 million worth of gold put in it? I don't think so. Not even the richest guy around is going to do that. This is an ornateness that's beyond our thoughts in many places. The silver, 7,500 pounds of that. Got the gold, one thing. Now, silver is not cheap. And you have that on top of it. Then you have the bronze, 5,350 pounds, ultimately, of that as far as what it took to make this place. Now, when you get all of that together, what does that tell you about this particular place that's being built? Would there have been a value that it would have been seen to it?
It'd be great if you were trying to rob the rich of you. They cost it a whole lot.
And that's why in the future this happens.
Later on, you have people of Babylon come in with the temple and they see that. And they say, hey, this is a crime for taking over. Go ahead.
Not to mention getting these materials. They didn't have the, you know, the type of industrial smelting and machinery to mine it. And so just the fact that they have this much of that is, you know, pretty profound.
Set with gold that's out from Egypt and so forth, some of that's there, but you had to do it the old-fashioned Smith way of heating and pounding it out. And that shaping of it is a difficult process. But it would have been done. You can see why there is a need for the kind of workmen that were there involved, and you know, just how much commitment it took, how much effort you would have had in getting all that. Angie, go ahead.
I think that we need to realize so much, this was all given willfully by the people.
Yeah.
God said, this is how much I need, but he said, each of you has purposes. Every one of them were a part of that endeavor.
Yeah.
And those that gave what they had, this is theirs that they're putting into that, and I think they're meant to have that connection to it.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to reflect back to, this is only a part of the riches that they had in hand that he's provided to them all this
right,
time.
Right.
And so he's putting into one place a reminder of who he is and what he's given them.
Right.
And what a little bit of that they've given back in turn. So how magnificent that small amount is.
Right. And we're going to get to that in just a minute. Here, as we look at chapter 38, and what is 36 and 38, and what they're going to do. When you look at all of this and the workmen being around all of this, doing these kinds of things, putting this into a place that is like this, what would have been the recognition of the value in terms of them looking at people with the false gods that were there before. God clearly put a contrast between the way in which the idols were done and the way in which you have his place structured. With idolatry, were the places that were magnificent open to everybody or closed off? Typically far more open. You may have had a royal class that would have been given that, but you almost had some public show of the gold and everything else. Where's most of the gold and all of that very expensive stuff in the tabernacle? Where is it and who sees it?
It's covered up.
The priest.
Most all of it is covered up. It's the priest who see it. But the representation is, who is in there? God is in there. The idea, not God himself, but his glory, his representation is there. Therefore, if you look at it, the wealth and everything was for him. The glory went to him. All of those kind of things, the honor went to him. I think that's a pretty clear indication of what they were there. It isn't supposed to give them awe and wonder about all of it. This is supposed to be presented to God. Worship is always like that. It's presented to God. It's what it is that we first look at in adoring and giving him the majesty and acknowledging that has been a part of worship of all times. And that's the point that's here. He receives the best. All of these kinds of things are reminders of that. The other thing is, when you have the priests that are in there seeing all of that and reminded of that by what they're looking at, they recognize that this is not just any place. It should have reminded them of the value of their service to God. They had been given a rich blessing. Instead of seeing it that way and doing the work they should have with self-commitment, with sacrifice, they were the ones who became more and more indulgent and demanding greater and greater parts of the sacrifices that did not belong to them, reworking the flesh hooks so that they could take more of the sacrifice away from God, taking of the fat of it, which never belonged to them, but belonged to God. Those kind of acknowledgments should have caused them to say, wait a minute, this isn't right. We don't deserve this. This is God. That's the whole thing that should have been seen by them from the very start of their time of service. Go ahead. Yeah, and some of it is a stretch from our own imagination, but some of that, the perfect case for it, is in Hebrews chapter 9, when it's talking about by the symbol of the tabernacle itself. We're going to look that over when we get in those last two classes. Think about, with all of this, yet how many times did people go in there? And how many times into that last compartment did anybody go, you know, every year? One time a year. And that's going to present something of all those millions of people in that time in this exodus that would have taken place there. Because there would have been at least 3.5-4 million people, probably a good deal more than that. But with all of those, only one person one time a year could go into that most holy place. That says something about the Old Testament system and who could draw nigh to God. And now what can we do? We can all go before the Holy of Holies to ask the Father of those things, because we're open to Him in prayer. And that's something that they could have never imagined doing for Him.
Do you know how long the the tabernacle and then the ark was in existence before it was lost?
I don't recall just exactly. I know that when you have the tabernacle, it was taken out of the way, of course, in the reign of Solomon, because you had that come to be the making of the temple. But then the temple was destroyed in, what would that have been, 586 B.C., ultimately, with the invasion of Nebuchadnezzar and those of the Babylonians, rebuilt during the time that was there of prophets, please. It's gone right now. Ezra was there, but the prophet, the Old Testament prophet. No, I'll get this. I'll come up with it on Wednesday. My mind's not working now.
So how far from Moses to Solomon? How many years approximately did this, was this before the people of Israel, the tabernacle?
You would have had approximately about 300 years, or wait a minute. About 400 years, looks like, about 400 years. Anybody else? No, probably would have been close to 300. So,
I'm not sure we'll get anything when we get to the sacrifices, but the sharp contrast between what they built with the activity that has to go on in order to benefit the people.
Correct.
And the unpleasantness that had to create around it.
Exactly.
Is huge.
Yeah. And that dichotomy between, here's what God had built for His presence to be symbolized, and on the outside you've got all of this killing of animals, the blood being put on the horns of the altar, the blood being sprinkled inside the Holy of Holy place at the side of the mercy seat. All of these kind of things, that unpleasantness, how did it come? By our sin. By their sins that were there. Now what takes place? Within there, there's beauty of the holiness of God. That picture does a great deal. There are a number of things that I think probably are meant to symbolize. They aren't explicitly stated. I want to be careful in not overstating that. But when you look at the whole of the picture as it's done, it's pretty clear that there's a picture of beauty and yet a foul stench in the air all the time because of the sacrifices that would have been going on.
Was that Old Testament prophet you're trying to remember, Haggai?
Yes, there we go. And during his time you have that of them being told, why have you built your own homes and not built the temple that built my house? All right, anybody else there? On that? Okay. Another thing of just by way of comparison, all of this temple or all of the tabernacle site, you look up here, this square represents an American football field. There's the hole in that square of the tabernacle. You could fit this several times, about four times, into an American football field. The whole thing. The court, all of it. Another point of saying this is definitely a smaller place than most of the time we have thought about. And the reason for that. You see, in comparison, the places of the idolatrous temples. Anybody ever been over into Greece or Egypt or any of those places where you've seen the ruins of those idolatrous temples? they're huge in comparison to this, because they're meant to be a place of a lot of things going on, and many of them flat out ugly evil. And here, very different as what you said. Exodus 36. Look at verses 3 starting through 7. Will somebody read that for me? Exodus 36, 3 through 7. Go ahead. Over.
And they received from Moses all the offering which the children of Israel had brought for the work of the service of making the sanctuary. So they continued bringing to him freewill offerings every morning. Then all the craftsmen who were doing all the work of the sanctuary came, each from the work he was doing, and they spoke to Moses, saying, "The people bring much more than enough for the service of the work which the Lord commanded us to do." So Moses gave a commandment, and they caused it to be proclaimed throughout the camp, saying, "Let neither man nor woman do any more work for the offering of the sanctuary." And the people were restrained from bringing, for the material they had was sufficient for all the work to be done, indeed too much.
Okay. That statement that's made out of the last part of verse 6, the people were restrained from bringing, has the sense of something that's done forcibly. In other words, they had to say, "No, I mean, stop now." A kind of a forceful putting of that. So they could stop that offering from coming in that sort of a way. When you look at that, with all of this having been provided for, you have, as we had talked about last time in the last class on Wednesday night, all of the offering that it had said, here's the commandment of what they were to do. God commanded Moses. Moses then went and commanded the people and told them about all that was necessary. He's laid out these plans now, and he says, this is what we're going to need this for. Then there's the giving. The giving is completed, and now what you find out as the beginning of the work taking place there in chapter 35. As you begin that, chapter 36 says, whoa, we've got enough. What does that tell you about the willingness that was on their part to give? All right, there was a great willingness, and I forgot who said it, but pointed out you all need to be a part of this. That they would have felt that fact that they were made to be a part. That always helps. When you give somebody something and they don't work for it at all, how well do they see it as far as a blessing? Not too much. I think generation after generation has to learn that for themselves. Back in my younger days, Kennedy and Johnson, as they had the idea of going in and making a great kind of a human sacrifice for all of these things of poor who would have not adequate housing, everything else. They were going to make this big sacrifice, huge amount of government spending. We're going to make these nice houses, and we're going to give them to these people, and that's going to lift them up out of poverty, and it's going to cause them to start acting like they have something, and so it'll be a reforming of society by giving them these places to live. I can remember some older people, my mom and dad among them, and some others saying, "That's not going to work. That's not going to work." And I thought, well, you know what? Sounds pretty good. I was a little enough kid that kids always want to be a little bit more liberal, I think, than their parents started things. But I thought, that sounds pretty good. And then it didn't take hardly any time to see that exactly what they're saying happened. You're having a big surge toward it now. And the idea is of the same thing. I'm not getting into the politics of it. I'm just getting into the point of practicality. If you don't have an investment in something, you don't care about it too much. When you have blood, sweat, and tears in it, now you're going to care. And that's what some of these are. Not only are they working to give, they're also working. Many of these people, it points out, not just men that were there involved in construction, but the women with regard to the fabric, everything else, the detail, the design. This is going to require a lot of people to be involved in a process here. And so the point is, they're ready to do it. Which tells you right now that commitment level is high. Now watch how fast it goes away. Because that's what you're going to notice as we keep going through. Go ahead.
Also shows you the enormous amount of wealth that they carried out of Egypt.
But the first verse. Okay. I'm not talking, I'm just showing. So in 36 we have, here's the empowerment of wisdom, insight. The people give more than enough. They build the tabernacle together. And then in the building of the courtyard, you notice the same thing being brought out. So that's the pattern. The first couple of chapters were about the planning for it. The next couple of chapters about the doing of it. And that's how this is going in the last few of our lessons. Okay, I'll stop there. And we'll take up at that point next time with lesson number, what was it? Doesn't say. But lesson number 20 is what we'll be using.